You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this snowy Monday here in Middle Tennessee. Vanderbilt Athletics has put out this release due to positive COVID-19 testing within the program. Vanderbilt has announced that their men's basketball activities have been temporarily paused. So they will not participate in this week's Legends Classic, which was supposed to take place in Connecticut. Also, I'm seeing that there is swirlings out there. I don't know if it is official yet, but I'm seeing a lot of sources are saying that the Northwestern Minnesota game on Saturday in Minneapolis is expected to be canceled as well. The football game.
It's getting very complicated in the Big
Minnesota.
Ten.
Yep.
Especially for Ohio State, who had to cancel their game. Their coach has the COVID. The game against Michigan State is still up in the air. They're hoping to play, but if they are not able to play that, they would technically drop below the threshold of the number of games. That's even if they play Michigan. Assuming they do, they would still be under the minimum six to participate in the Big Ten championship game. Now, I'm going to guess that they'll change the rules between now and then if this continues to be an issue, which I think it will be. Remember, when you test positive in the Big Ten, you're out for 3 weeks, 21 days. Their rules are a little different than some other leagues.
By the way, it looks like it is official. That football game has indeed been canceled. So
they've officially whacked the Michigan State-Ohio State game?
No, I'm sorry. The Minnesota-Northwestern. I was seeing a lot of sources. It looks like Nicole Auerbach is saying that the Minnesota-Northwestern game has indeed been canceled.
That's the first one Northwestern has had to miss. Remember that they,
coming
despite
off
the
loss.
Yeah,
yes.
Despite the loss, which they had control of the game. They had a bad fumble that cost them against Michigan State. But they still have the inside track to play in that game, in the championship game.
All right, let's talk with TD. Talking with TD is the podcast that you can hear on Wednesdays on 102.5 The Game. Nate and TD on Friday nights during the 6 o'clock hour. And now he joins us. Teron Davenport is also the NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans for ESPN and ESPN.com. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. Weigh in on our discussion to end the last hour. The stat that's out there on the 370 carries over the years has been kind of a death knell for running backs. But I said, look, I'm not disregarding or discounting that stat. I do think it holds weight. I think stats are what they are. It's not an opinion. It's just stating a fact that when running backs get to that threshold, they've never been the same afterwards. I mean, there's just a lot of history of that. But I said, maybe we downplay it a little bit because there's just simply not the collisions, and players are unable to get away with what they used to do back before kind of these rule changes. Do you buy into any of that at all or no?
Yeah, I buy into that. I think the collisions are different. And as it pertains to Derrick Henry, he doesn't really have as many collisions. Of course, there were a couple last week and a couple yesterday. But I think you have to look at guys like Sean Alexander, who happens to be a mentor of his, a guy he talks to every day. Alexander was able to withstand a couple seasons of that intense running, you know, getting the ball at one season, I believe it was almost 400 times, you know. But then you also look at Larry Johnson. You know, there are guys who took that pounding and they gave you production over a 2-3 year period. But then after that, yeah, they did drop off, and it's understandable. I just think it's different. And you have to mention Eddie George as well, who just happens to be a mentor of Derrick Henry. So I think he has the right people in his corner just to kind of help him manage the threshold of carries that he's getting. And then just the fact that he's in such superb shape. And you have to look at how a lot of these defenders, they're not as big as they used to be. You know, the linebackers are more like safeties back in the day. You know, Carnell Nate, Ronnie Lott, those guys would probably be outside linebackers in today's game. So it is a lot different.
You know, I feel like Lane Kiffin at times when Derrick Henry gets the ball. We've all seen the shots of Lane Kiffin, whether he was the OC at Alabama or now the head coach at Ole Miss. It's like well before the play is finished, you know, he's got his arms up in the air. He's throwing his clipboard up in the air, celebrating a touchdown. I swear, you know, last week, this week, and other times, there's just times when he gets the ball and you need to see a couple of steps and you kind of see what's in front of him and you know how he runs. And you just kind of throw your hands up in the air and you go, well, that's going to the house, or, you know, that's going to be a gain of 40 or what. It's crazy. Like, how many running backs do we have the ability to do that with in the NFL? I would say very, very few. I think you could look at maybe a Tyreek Hill in Kansas City because of his speed, and probably if he catches it, you can throw your hands up in the air. But Derrick Henry has the ability to do that where he can take a couple of steps and you look at what's in front of him and you can start celebrating. That's how good he is.
Yeah, it's just beautiful to watch him play. And I'm not saying he's better than these guys or even in their stratosphere, but, you know, you look at guys that I've watched play, Eric Dickerson, Barry Sanders, those are probably, you know, my favorites just to watch, just the poetry in motion. But then Derrick Henry is just as fun to watch. And, again, I'm not saying he's up there with those guys, and I know older people will say Gale Sayers, and without a doubt, but it's just it's entertaining to watch him because he's so big, he runs so strong, but then he has the you know, side-to-side, the lateral movement when need be, like the jump cut last week, and then the ability to accelerate. It's really poetry in motion. And we're getting a treat every time we watch this man play. And I think we need to understand that and cherish this opportunity to see him do what he does.
That's why I make such a big deal out of this, because I want to preserve that, if I'm the Titans, for as long as I possibly can. And so that's why I bring up the 370. Just let's take Sean Alexander, that you've mentioned a number of times, Teron. 2005 is when he had the 370. 1,880 yards that year. I think he might have been the MVP. They got to the Super Bowl. The next year he had 896. And there's just a long list. There's like 20 guys on this list where almost every time. The only exception is Eric Dickerson, who somehow was able to do it year after year and avoid this. But
how many carries did Alexander have the 2 years before that, though?
The 2 years before that, he never hit 370.
Well, how many did he have?
Oh, I don't have his year-by-year stats in front of me. I'll look it up for you. But
I'm pretty sure he was close in those 2 years because he had a three-year stretch where he had a bunch of carries.
Yeah, well, I know he didn't have 370 that year. I will tell you here in just a moment. But, you know, let's just go down the list. Jamal Anderson, Larry Johnson.
Michael Turner,
Barry Foster, Edgerrin James. Ricky Williams, Jerome Bettis, Earl Campbell, Curtis Martin, Christian Okoye. There's a lot of them. And Darren's point is well taken. Jamal Lewis, he had 387, and he had the 2,000-yard season, you know, from Tennessee. His yards were cut in half the next year, 1,000. So it's a stunning list when you look at it, and you look at the following year. And so that's why I put it out there every week, because they still have control over this. I'm pretty sure they're aware of it. And Teron, I just brought up yesterday, I thought it was interesting that they decided to give it to him six times on that one drive in the fourth quarter when they were up 38-20, because that was an opportunity to pull back like they have at times during the season.
Yeah, well, Foreman, he was dealing with something at that point, and that's when they put Henry back out there. So, yeah, I get it. You want to try to manage the carries, and, you know, this is where that three-headed monster that they were kind of flashing, this is where it comes into play. And I know fans don't want that because they say, well, we just want to see Henry carry the football. But there has to be some degree of preservation. If you could allow him to take off different series, you know, just to get a breather and not –
hit that number that you mentioned, I think it is valuable because you know what happens in the playoffs. They're going to really, really run him and use him up. So I think you have to keep that in mind and just gear up towards that.
Which is why this stretch right here is critical, right? If they can create some type of separation where they can kind of coast to the finish line, maybe they'll be able to do that in maybe the last couple of games, Teron, and use him sparingly, knowing that they've got the division wrapped up and a playoff spot wrapped up. So obviously that's got to be something they're discussing. How about the play of their third left tackle, David Quisenberry, yesterday? Obviously it's a great story that we've all become aware of, but for him to jump in there, I get it, albeit one game, but I thought he did a really good job. What say you?
Yeah, David Quisenberry did an excellent job, and he did a good job last week against the Ravens when it came in. He helped neutralize Yannick Ngakoue, who was murdering Tyson Braylon. You know what I mean? So I think you definitely have to tip your cap to him. You look at some of the blocks that he had down the field. You know, he opened up things at the second level for Henry on a couple of his runs. You saw him come out and block in screens. He handled pass protection well. David Quisenberry is actually a pretty good player, and he's showing it. And it's great to see that, you know, knowing the relationship that he had has with Mike Vrabel. I asked him about that. You know, you could tell he was getting emotional, you know, talking about it. So it's just great to see him get his first start and do what he did. And he played really good football. He was a big part of their being able to run the football the way that they did.
They ran the ball excellent. Teron, we'll close the book on the Sean Alexander workload thing here. I've got his stats here. He had basically five tremendous years from 2001 through 2005. In the 2 years leading up, he had the most carries leading up to his year in 2005, where he had 370. 326, then 353, and then he hit 370, and after that he was never the same after that.
Yeah.
So that's he did have a pretty good workload, because a lot of people are saying, well, what's the big difference between 353 or 360 as opposed to 370? Well, that's a great question. I don't know the answer, but just the numbers are the numbers there. So let me throw.
I think the bigger picture is the back to back to back 325 plus.
That's a really good way to look at it.
Than just that one 370. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's something, you know, they've got to research, because they got to protect that asset as long as they can. I'd love to have two or three more years like this, because he changes the game unlike anybody other than a quarterback in the league, I think.
No doubt.
So let me ask you this. Another part of it is, as you guys were talking about, Quisenberry did a great job. The offensive line did a fantastic job based on all what they have to deal with. But another thing that was noted by a lot of people was the blocking of the wide receivers down the field. And it's another thing, Teron, that you've said a lot. Corey Davis had a typical Corey Davis day yesterday. Did his job down the field blocking. They only throw it to him three times. He catches all three. Makes a huge play at the end of the first half. He even had another catch that was called back for a penalty. But at the end of the day, it's not going to equate probably to a 1,000-yard season or anything, but it just shows you how valuable he is. He is valuable at a certain price. So it's another thing that we've been touching on as a theme. What's he worth? How do they keep him around? Because you'd love to have him.
Yeah, and that's going to be a tough nut to crack, because – he's going to hit the market if he hits the market. Let's put it that way. And I would imagine a team like the Packers, you know, I definitely think the Eagles, you know, these are teams that are going to want to bring him in, just understanding the talent that he has and knowing how he could fit into their scheme and put up numbers. So you also, in addition to that blocking part, you have the potential that he's going to get paid off of too. So that's really why it's incumbent to, you know, imperative, excuse me, for the Titans to find a way to get an offer out to him. He fits this offense to a T, you know what I mean? And you look at just being on the opposite side of A.J. Brown, you never hear him demanding, you know, to get 10 targets. If he doesn't get targeted, it's not a big issue, you know, that's appearing to us on the outside. I'm sure there are conversations. But I think he just fits from a mindset, a skill set, an approach to football. He fits this team perfectly, and I think that does have value. Now, will that be 15 to 16 million a year value? I doubt it, but I think it's going to be, you know, one of those deals that they have to try to get done. And he kind of shifts to the top. You know, I think when you look at free agents that they have to bring back, it goes Corey Davis, Desmond King, because he's going to be more affordable. You know, Jonnu Smith is the top guy, but he's another one in that same situation as far as potential, mindset, and approach, you know, because he did a really good job blocking as well yesterday. So, you know, you have two guys that could get paid by other teams based off of what other teams believe he could do. So that's going to be tough for them. And, you know, Jayon Brown, I don't know if they're going to bring him back, given how, you know, they look at David Long as a key piece to their future.
Let's talk defense for a moment. It did look like, Teron, they changed the game plan, especially after the first couple of drives, or maybe it just didn't work as well the first couple of drives. The Colts clearly were having trouble, especially after Costanzo got hurt. But I thought the Titans should deserve some credit for not allowing Phillip Rivers to do what he did in the first matchup, which was just sort of sit back there and pick him apart. They were more aggressive. They brought more people. They forced him into quicker throws. They tried to take away some of the easy throws underneath, which was a huge criticism. I know you've been noticing that. Did you notice a difference in the coverage and the difference in the game plan?
Yeah, for sure. They played a bit closer than I've seen them play before. They challenged them. And some people say, oh, well, you know, they didn't have press coverage. They weren't a yard away from them, so how did they challenge them? Well, there's an easy way to challenge someone without being right up there in their face. Basically, you could challenge them within the routes, and that's what you saw them do. They were physical within that 5 yards, and I think that really mattered as far as disrupting the timing. You had blitzes going, and with those blitzes, you know, you had Rashawn Evans a couple of times. He was at the line of scrimmage, you know, lined up right over the interior gaps and dropped back into the passing lane, and that caused Phillip Rivers to recoil and try to go someplace else. So there were some things that happened from a coverage standpoint and attacking standpoint as far as blitzing Desmond King. Malcolm Butler blitzed a couple times as well. You saw Vaccaro being sent. And I think that's how you continue to get that pressure and you keep a team from being able to throw it in 2.3 seconds. You clog up those lanes and then you attack them. So I think they did a really good job there. They even got a cover sack. Jeffrey Simmons, his sack was because the coverage was real good. So he was able to continue working and get to the quarterback and bring him down.
We're talking to Teron Davenport, ESPN, Titans NFL Nation reporter. TD, one of the phrases that I love that you use in when we did Chase and TD, you brought it up all the time about that you can see the guy's ribs because he's that hungry, and that's the type of player he is. He's just going out and trying to make a play every time he hits the field. I know Breon Borders has been around. He's been in the league since 2017, but he strikes me as that type of guy, and I feel like that his play and his hunger has been contagious to the rest of the secondary. Have you seen that too?
Yeah, without a doubt. And there's no coincidence that that team has gotten better once he was out there and solidified that left corner position. And for me, it goes down. It started with one play, and this was against the Bears where Foles dumped it to Jimmy Graham in the flat. Graham caught it and turned upfield, and it was just Graham and Borders. And I was like, okay, let's see what he does. He brought him down, one-on-one, open field. Breon Borders is maybe 6 feet, 185, something like that. We're talking about a 6'6", 250-pound guy that they met up, and he brought him down. That is an example of the fire and the ability, the desperation that he plays with, because not a lot of corners are going to want to be in that situation. And then you look at just the way that he is – very sticky on receivers. You know, he covered Darnell Mooney pretty well that game. You know, this past one, he and T.Y. Hilton had some battles, and granted, Hilton made an outstanding catch for a touchdown, but they were going back and forth pretty well. And then, obviously, he had the interception, which was, you know, it was an overthrow by Rivers, but still, he hauled it in, and he dropped the pick six. But definitely seeing a lot of desperation and just wanting to do everything he can, understanding that this is his opportunity, and I think he's done a great job. He's been a big part of that third down defense improving because you see him getting some passes broken up. I definitely got to shout Breon Borders out for what he's done. And it's fun to watch a guy, you know, come out of nowhere and play so well.
Now, when you talk about a team, you'll always try and identify the dudes. Like, oh, they got some dudes. And with this Titans team, we know Derrick Henry is certainly one of those guys. Jeffrey Simmons, in my mind, has gotten to that point. And for the last several years, we have said Kevin Byard. He's a dude. He's one of the dudes. This year, it hasn't been that way. Do you chalk it up as simply he's having a bad year? He can bounce back. He's still a dude. He's still a very important part of that defense. Or do you think there's more to it than maybe we're not seeing?
No, I mean, I still think he's a top player, but he's not playing anywhere near to what he's capable of doing, and he'll tell you that. I think there are some lapses in technique. Like, you look at the touchdown that Trey Burton caught. You know, Trey Burton was able to give him an outside move and kind of open up, made Byard open up to the outside, and then he went back inside and was able to get position. You know, those are things that you don't always see happen to Kevin Byard. I think it's really just a lot of, with it being a new scheme, I think it just may be, and this isn't anything I'm saying definite, but I think he just may be out there thinking too much, and there's just that degree of hesitation, and that's why you see him almost near tip passes, whereas before, if it was tip, he's catching that, you know. So I think that really has a lot to do with it.
So I've asked you this before, but I'm curious to see how your answer has maybe changed. Now that Arthur Smith is well into his second year as the offensive coordinator, what is your evaluation of him and how he's developed as a play caller to this point?
I think he's done really well. He's very creative. And it goes beyond just play calling. It's the play design. There are different things, you know, like that touchdown that Derrick Henry had yesterday, you know, designing it so that you had the other receivers, Cam Batson and one of the other receivers blocking it to clear it out so Henry could run into the end zone. I think using shifts and motions, that's really good because he does that not only to gather information, but more importantly, to give the guys better positioning. It's a really nice mixture of older run concepts and newer concepts as well. So I think that's really good. I love the way he sticks to the run, even if they're down by two touchdowns, you know, because yep. He understands that the running game is what gets this offense going. I just think with Arthur Smith, when he's in the groove, he could call plays with the best of them, but it's just a matter of getting in that groove. There are some times where he could get a little predictable or repetitive, and that's something that obviously he's working on. But, you know, he has his plays that he likes to go to, and he's going to draw them up and get them out there for the guys to do what they need to do.
But the play on the goal line to Tannehill, I mean, that was perfect because everybody was thinking it was yeah. going to Henry and that was going to be the fourth touchdown, and he ran the fake. I thought that was a great play call.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And they did something like that for the two-point conversion. I think it was last week or recently, one of the last couple of games, they did that as well.
What's on tap this week? What do you got?
Got Jake Trotter from ESPN, covers the Browns. I'm going to get him on, and we'll see. I'm thinking about a couple other guests, so I'm not sure yet, but always going to bring a fun show to listen to and informative, so I'll say that.
There you go. Check it out this week. Appreciate the visit as always. Thanks for doing this as always.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you guys.
All right. Talking with TD. That's Teron Davenport. His podcast will drop on Wednesday. Nate and TD on Friday nights right here on 102.5 The Game during the 6 o'clock hour. And you can also find his work on ESPN and ESPN.com. We'll come back. Don't forget, This Is What I Know at 11:45. More discussion of the Titans' victory in Indianapolis yesterday on the other side. But right now I want to talk to you a little college hoops. Gonzaga and Baylor will be going toe-to-toe for what could be the nation's top ranking in college basketball. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving all college basketball fans who sign up right now a chance to win $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win this Clash of the Titans. Plus, you'll get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 when signing up using the promo code 1025GAME. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME when you sign up for your shot to turn $100 into a lot more when you bet on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win. Once again, that code, 1025 game, during sign-up for a limited time, only DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.